Needless to say, there are a lot of people in Indianapolis, not just people who live in IPS, not just people who work in IPS, not just people who have kids in IPS, not just people who went to IPS back in the day, that woke up last night, woke up this morning, and are going, huh? At the news that what we had been told for several years was that IPS was having financial difficulties. What we were told last year, specifically by the interim superintendent, was that IPS had a serious budget deficit that might require cutting, that did require cutting staff, might require closing schools. Even as the new superintendent, Dr. Louis Farabee, came in, he was hearing $30 million deficits and dire projections, and they started really looking at the numbers and discovering that, wait a minute, things may not be as bad as they seem. You know, it's not rosy. This is not the Ford Foundation. This is not Mark Cuban. But it's a little bit different. And it's not a $30 million deficit. And they ended the end of last year, 2013, with an $8.4 million surplus. The superintendent of schools, Dr. Louis Farabee, is on our live line. Doc, how you doing?
Oh, well, and you, sir, thank you for having me.
The biggest question that I've had people, you know, just here in the radio station is, how do you do a budget and just put in expenses that you're not going to spend, and how do you not adjust that during the year and the board not know it and the superintendent not know it and the community not know it?
Well, Amos, you know, I can't really speak in great detail what happened in the past. What I can tell you that, you know, what had been communicated, I believe, to the community and to the public was that we had a deficit. And I wanted to be clear that that was a budgeted deficit, not an actual deficit. And so what we were communicating with that $30 million deficit was basically what we projected to spend in our projected revenue. And if you compared the two, there was a difference of about $30 million. And so I thought it was very important to make sure that there was clarity for our stakeholders around our true current financial status and make sure that that was well communicated.
I don't know whether this has been, this was not asked in the briefing. I don't think this has been asked by any media. I'm going to ask it in the other places where you've been and you had some responsibility for budgeting. How did you all build a budget?
And so I am accustomed to a more transparent process where there are reconciliation reports between projected and actual. I'm also very accustomed to having more stakeholder involvement and engagement in budget development and budget reporting. And so I'm very excited about convening a team of stakeholders from various representatives from our community to help us develop our budget, but also to be involved in the reporting process as well.
Would it make sense to develop a budget for a school system where, let's just say for the sake of the argument, you kind of think your revenue is going to be $250 million and you budget your expense, you decide, okay, how much of a surplus do we want to operate with? Well, how much of a cushion do we want? Let's say for the sake of the argument, you say $12 million and you make sure that the expenses that are approved to spend are $12 million less than your revenues.
Great point. And so there's two things that I want to emphasize based on this question. And one is, you're right. We need to develop a philosophy or procedure, if you will, around what do we see as a reasonable amount to keep in our reserve to make sure that we're able to make payroll should there be an emergency or we have a dramatic cut in funding that we were not prepared for. And so that needs to happen, and that will guide what we have in our reserve. The second thing that I would say is that the reductions that we made in eliminating certain positions was necessary and would be good business practice regardless of, you know, the financial state that we're in, because we needed to be more efficient in those areas. And so what I don't want to confuse our audience or the community with is that, you know, there's two sides of this. One side is balancing the budget and having that reserve that we talked about, but the other side is ensuring that we're aligning our resources with our needs, and that's a totally different conversation.
One of the things that kind of surprised me was in looking at what had in the broad categories of what had been approved to be spent and what was actually spent. And you're not as familiar with the whole desegregation and busing kids from IPS out to townships. But there had been budgeted $14.3 million for that purpose, which means there had to be $14.3 million coming from the state in revenue specifically for that purpose. But last year, IPS only spent $4.3 million because ain't that many kids left. They're all juniors and seniors being bused to Perry, Franklin, and Decatur. So a couple questions. When you went through your reconciliation, did you allow for most of that $14 million was in revenue but never spent as revenue?
So I can't really speak to how that projection was established because I agree with you. I think that we had enough information to project accurately what the expenses would be because, as you stated, you know, we know each year the number of students that will be impacted by the desegregation order. And so I believe this was an area where we dramatically overprojected or overstated what the expense would be, which resulted in, you know, a major contrast between our projected expenses and our actual expenses.
What kind of reaction have you gotten since last night? When you and the board, when you presented this information to the board, I was in the audience of the school board meeting and there was staff sitting on that left hand side of the room. And they just sat there like with their mouths open, like, huh? What kind of reaction have you gotten today?
So you're right. Everyone, you know, begins, you know, their response with, wow, this is very shocking. But after that initial shock, you know, I've gotten a lot of positive feedback. You know, this is a breath of fresh air for the district. You know, we really appreciate your openness. We really appreciate your transparency. We believe that this is a positive win-win for all of our stakeholders. You know, we want to be involved in setting our strategic priorities. I mean, it's been really positive. I think a lot of people appreciate the fact that they feel like they know what's going on with our finances and that I have a commitment to be transparent with our budget development process and also to have stakeholders involved. And so I'm really excited. I see this as a major opportunity for our district, and I believe others see this as well, as a means to really developing a strategic plan and strategic priorities and aligning a budget accordingly is an exciting opportunity for IPS.
Many people listening get paid every week, every other week, twice a month, once a month. How does a school system get its money? So we're talking about the dollars that come from state funds, from all the taxpayers of Indiana. We're not talking about federal Title I money or federal this money or special grant money. This is just the regular tax money that the state of Indiana provides schools, right?
Right. And so what's difficult, which goes back to your question about, you know, how do you establish what you need in your reserves, or if you're talking about your personal finance and your savings, is, you know, much different from your personal finance. You know you're going to get a paycheck on a certain date, and it's pretty frequent. With school finance, you get your payments in periods, and it's not always scheduled. And so it's important for us to have a certain cash balance or reserve, if you will, to make sure that we're able to handle our obligations accordingly. And what's unique about Indiana is our fiscal year is a calendar year, mm-hmm. and our school year, of course, is an academic year. And so you have a budget year that spans over two academic years, which makes it difficult sometimes to project what your revenue is going to be and when you're going to receive it. And it's also difficult to project sometimes, you know, what the actual expenses will be. But I do want to go back to, you know, people's response. You know, not only do I believe they appreciate, you know, this transparency, but, you know, the Board of Commissioners also share this commitment. And I just want to make sure that that's lifted up, that, you know, our Board of Commissioners are really excited about, you know, being forthright, and they want to be transparent with the community. And that's one of the things they talk with me about in my transition into leadership. And so as a governance team, again, there's a commitment to open the book and having individuals involved in our budget development process and also our regular reporting.
Now, you have asked the regular auditors for IPS to check these numbers. And then you've also asked, what is the organization, the Council of Great City Schools, that's all the big city school systems in the country, right, to bring an auditor in here. Who's going to pay for that audit?
Well, through our membership with the Council of Great City Schools, they offer a number of services. Uh-huh. And so part of that package will be some opportunities for us to have an external entity come in and assist us. You know, we anticipate that would be a minimal cost to the district, but we don't know at this point specifically what the cost would be. The other side of it is, you know, we also have, you know, the accounting system here in Indiana that also audits
State Board of Accounts, right. Mm-hmm.
And so we were scheduled to have an audit in 2014, and we're going to ask to make sure that that's accelerated as soon as possible to make sure that that audit is complete as well, because we want to get a very comprehensive look at our budget situation.
Is one of the other difficulties in budgeting a school system, I'll use salaries as an example, if somebody is a Title I teacher, does that mean their money is coming from state taxpayers, or is their money coming from federal taxpayers, because Title I is a federal program?
So Title I, special education, all federal programs are mostly funded through federal dollars. Mm-hmm. And so if you're a Title I teacher, if you will, then your funds are federal funds.
Mm. So when I'm looking at, you know, these projected expenses for salaries, that would not include Title I teachers or any teacher or the portion of their salaries that came from uncle's money.
That is correct.
That also would make it difficult to Does that also make it difficult to budget?
It does make it difficult. So one of the things that has obviously come up is, you know, teacher compensation. Mm-hmm. And so if you were to look at teacher compensation just by general fund, which what we've been talking about, that would be just a piece of the puzzle. Mm-hmm. Because you would have to look at our employees are funded through federal dollars as well. So that's our second language program, that's special education. That's most of our pre-K, that's Title I, that's career and technical education. And so it is really a very complex issue as you look at the funding sources you receive and how employees are compensated.
239-1310, 239-1310. We have a couple minutes to take some calls. We got some questions for the superintendent, Dr. Louis Farabee, 239-1310, 239-1310 is afternoon's name, or send me a quick email at praiseindy.com or a quick text message at 37890, keyword Amos, 37890, keyword Amos. I did get an email, superintendent, from somebody that knew you were calling, that it has a question, not about the budget. That's a good thing. It's a question about adult education. They say, why is IPS giving adult education to the townships of Warren, Washington, and Wayne? What does this mean for current high school equivalency classes within the IPS area? Are you giving away adult education?
We're not giving away adult education. We have elected to have others in the consortium be the primary providers, so we can focus on our K-12 efforts. But we'll continue to utilize IPS facilities, and potentially IPS teachers that have been involved will continue to be involved. But, you know, this is a situation where the consortium each year seeks input on who should be the primary providers, and we believe our focus at this point should be on K-12.
So in other words, these townships would provide the education, but it would be within IPS? Or you'd have
so
to go
there
to the
There are several adult ed providers, and they're okay. Not just townships. And there's actually very few townships that provide adult education programs. And so many of the other entities are programs like what the Goodwill provides.
Mm-hmm.
They're a good example of an entity that provides adult education programs. And so it is a collaborative through this consortium of several providers that offer adult education throughout the city for adults needing additional education opportunities.
And this would allow you to take some real expense and move it to some other real expense areas?
Well, not necessarily, because with this particular situation, the funding came to
from someplace else. Okay.
to provide this service.
Mm-hmm.
So whoever the provider is, that
okay.
would go to them.
All right. I was trying to save you some money there. Let me go to Anonymous at 239.
It does help streamline our focus, though, on K-12.
You want to be laser-focused on K-12. Let me go to Anonymous at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi.
Hi.
Welcome our superintendent to Indianapolis, and I hope that you get all the support that you need from the community and your staff to make this IPS the number one institution.
Thank you.
My question is to you. On the other day I heard, and I'm simply saying that I heard, because I like for you to answer it, that over at Broad Ripple High School, that they have a chemistry class. And sometimes they go in this chemistry class because the teacher has left for another job, which is great. But sometimes they don't even have a substitute over there. And in that class, no adult authority. And these children are in this class just performing. And I'm thinking, chemistry? I mean, and again, I don't know it to be true, but I heard it, and it just really bugged me. And I'd like for you to find out if that's the case over there, find out what's going on, because if that's the truth, then you know that's something that certainly needs to be addressed.
Yeah, that sounds very concerning. I am not aware of a situation where students would not be supervised by an educator. And,
uh-huh.
of course, and you're speaking in this particular situation, the chemistry class where students are not receiving services from a teacher is very concerning. So that's something that I'll gladly research. And
Great.
If you would like to provide your information, contact information to Amos, will definitely follow up on our findings.
All right, so Anonymous, if you would hold on, and Chris will get your information off the air, and
okay.
we'll pass this on to the superintendent staff. That'll allow me to talk to another Anonymous at 239.
You.
You're welcome at 239-1310. Hi there. Hello.
Yeah, Amos, how you doing?
Fine.
Yeah, I was just curious. We all know it starts at home, but then, you know, when the kids go to school, it's a different matter. When our kids get suspended from school, what is the purpose of that when they go home and spend 2 to 3 days or so or a week, but then when they go back to school, they're almost the same person? I think when a kid has been suspended numerous times, including the elementary schools, I think they should have to go to boys' school and see if that can help them out, because no, juveniles don't really do anything. And I remember having a kinship daughter. She went to juvenile. She said it was just a joke. But when she went to girls' school, it was a total matter. And when you go to girls' school and boys' school, if it's the same way it was about 4 or 5 years ago, when you go there and you don't act the way you should, you can be held anywhere from 6 months to a year.
But
I'll take that back.
All right, I'm gonna
so
let the
6 months until the time to get 21.
I'm gonna let the superintendent respond, but I think boys' school and girls' school are for people that have been accused of a crime. And if somebody's suspended from school for breaking a rule but not accused from a crime, that's a different issue, and you can't get sent to boys' and girls' school for doing that. Let me let the superintendent respond.
Yeah, I think you're right on track there, Amos, with that response. You know, suspension is a tricky balance, because you want to make sure that you protect the learning environment, and sometimes we have to remove students from the learning environment to ensure that others around them can get the education that they have a right to. But when we remove students, we also need to make sure that they also have an opportunity to have access to a quality education as well. It's a balance that we'll continue to maneuver, and it's something that is a priority for me because I don't want us to have massive number of students suspended where they're not getting their education and ultimately getting further behind and not being successful in school.
All right, I appreciate it. 239-1310. 239-1310 is afternoon's name. Meanwhile, you know, the same time you were talking about the finances of the district, you were also talking about academics briefly. What is that good news?
That's great news. I think this is great news for us as we think about academics, because it gives us an opportunity to open doors for how we will support our students academically. And so I'm excited that, you know, this gives us the opportunity to expand our programs, our curriculum offerings, and ultimately, you know, when we have greater resources and align them appropriately, our students will benefit.
And this is day three of I-STEP.
This is day three. Thank you.
The Lord sent no snow up in here.
Yes,
amen.
We have no delay, no cancellation this week during I-STEP. I'm really proud of our students who have come to school. They've been on time, and they've been focused and prepared. We have a few students that have missed school, so just remind the listening audience, if you have a child or you know a student in IPS and they're testing this week, encourage them to be at school on time and every day to make sure that they're able to test appropriately. Thank you to our parents for making sure our students get proper rest and they're at school, and your support for this testing period has been exceptional, and we ask that you continue to provide that support.
And I know you haven't, with all this fiscal stuff, you haven't had time to go into school. Is that something you want to do and visit during I-STEP or and I-READ next week, or does that put too much stress on the building?
No, I was out on Monday morning when we started I-STEP testing this week, and so I definitely want to make sure that I continue to have time to spend in schools. As soon as we finish this call, I'm actually going out to Shortridge High School and talk with their staff and students there. So, you know, we will continue to put our best foot forward in serving our students in light of this new information. But I believe this new information provides us an opportunity to be more inclusive, transparent, and strategic.
Brian will be our last call with Superintendent Farrell, because I know when he gets to Shortridge, and that's the school in law and public policy, those students are going to ask you some real tough questions then, boy. Let me go to Brian. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Miss, how are you guys?
Fine.
I just wanted to make a comment, Mr. Superintendent. I hope you will continue with your efforts to cull the bureaucracy in IPS and apply the money that otherwise would have been spent toward that, toward education. I applaud your efforts, even though I'm not in your district, and I wish you continued success.
One other thing, and I know, Superintendent, you always try to stay positive, but your immediate predecessor, the interim superintendent, threw you under the bus and took the train and ran you over in this morning's newspaper, especially the online story, and at the website Chalkbeat Indiana.
So first of all, I want to thank Brian for his comments and words of encouragement. And Brian, I appreciate you calling in. Amos, you know me. I'm not going to take cheap shots at anybody. This is not about me. This is not about adults. This is making sure that we are positioned to serve our students so they can succeed. I'm not going to get in tit for tat and relates to throwing mud. I feel very confident that we have provided our stakeholders and our community with the information that they need, and is more clearer and accurate picture of our budget situation.
All right, Superintendent, I appreciate the time. Going over there, Shortridge.
Thank you, sir.
See what's going on. Superintendent of IPS, Dr. Louis Farabee. But the lines remain to be open. Your reaction to the budget news. We were looking at a surplus. Now we're looking at a deficit. Now we're looking at a surplus. Your reaction to all of this. Also, when we come back, I will tell you what the interim superintendent, Dr. Farabee, is. He was so nice. But I'll tell you what his immediate predecessor said about him in this whole crisis of budget. See whether you agree with me that she tried to throw him under the bus, run over the train. And actually, I thought she acted like one of them desperate housewives of real housewives of one fill in the blank of the city. I mean, it was uncalled for. We'll tell you what she told the Star and some other people. I'm talking about Peggy Hinckley. It's After News with Amos after these.